This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with conservation specialists relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Our guest today is Kim Crumbo, a member of the Leadership Council of the Rewilding Institute and the Mexican Wolf Recovery Consultant with the Wildlands Network. He is a retired Navy SEAL and is a recipient of the Bronze Star. Kim served for 20 years with the National Park Service in the Grand Canyon as the River Ranger and later as Wilderness Coordinator. He worked as a professional river guide for 10 years and 2 years as the Wilderness Coordinator for the Sierra Club. He assists an eclectic array of conservationist partners in development and implementation of the Western Wildway, including wilderness and national monument designations. His work includes active participation in a collaborative effort of local, regional, and national conservation, scientific, and sportsman's organizations, and concerned citizens to help save the endangered Mexican gray wolf. Among his many awards, Kim received the Wilberforce Foundation's 2016 Conservation Leadership Award. Among other publications, he's the author of A River Runner's Guide to the History of the Grand Canyon. So, Kim Crumbo, welcome. It's great to be talking with you. So, let's start with what the Rewilding Institute is and what your role is in its activity.
Well, yeah, Rewilding Institute, kind of an offshoot of the Wildlands Network effort. The founder is Dave Foreman, but we look primarily at rewilding as a premise that in terms of restoring the ecological integrity of wildlands, including its full complement of native species. So that's pretty much what our goal is.
So the Rewilding Institute has a number of members who make up the Wildlands Network. Explain what the Wildlands Network is.
Well, the Wildlands Network was formed from the old Wildlands Project, and it consisted of networks of people protecting networks of land. So the whole idea was to protect core areas, wilderness areas, and essential wildlife habitat areas, and connect them with an effective linkage. We call them wildlife corridors or pathways or wildways.
So the Rewilding Institute has an online newsletter, I think, and people can access that just by looking up Rewilding Institute. Is that right?
Correct. Yes, that's the fastest way.
Okay, so your role is the Mexican Wolf Recovery Consultant. So tell us about your role and the Mexican Wolf. What's your responsibility?
Okay, with the Rewilding Institute, Dave Parson and I, you know, primarily Dave Parson, who is intimately involved with the Mexican Wolf Recovery, he's sort of the carnivore expert.
Uh-huh.
I am the recovery consultant for the Wildlands Network. So what we're doing in that role is to keep track of the progress that we're making in terms of recovering the Mexican wolf.
And are you out in the field, or how do you gather your information?
Yeah, we've been I've been involved with the recovery effort since the mid-1990s. So we've been keeping track of what's happening in terms of opportunities to restore wolves to the Southwest. I've been involved with the Mexican Wolf Recovery Team. I was actually part of that, one of their token conservation representatives, and stay engaged with various partners through an informal coalition. So we've been active in doing that, keeping tabs on the status of the Mexican wolves. Unfortunately, I don't get out that much. I did do some hiking in the Gila last year, and I have done quite a bit of, in terms of wilderness surveys along the Mogollon Rim, which is part of the recovery area.
Uh-huh.
But of late, not getting out too much anymore. So how
do you gather your information?
We keep track of what's happening in terms of there's a lot of things happening regarding the agencies, regarding a variety of conservationists, their work. So it's basically keeping tabs on what is happening in terms of promoting recovery of wolves throughout the nation, but in the case of the Mexican wolf, certainly the Southwest.
So what's the current status of the wolf in the Southwest?
People probably heard that the Trump administration has is in the process of delisting the wolf nationwide, which is a real serious concern. That does not affect yet the Mexican wolf, which is a separate subspecies that's under different listings. And so the Mexican wolf still remains protected under the Endangered Species Act.
So do you have wolves that have been collared?
Oh, yes. Yes, there's a...
So you can keep track of their movements, is that right?
Well, yeah, it's actually the role of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the various state agencies to keep track of them. But we receive periodic updates in terms of, what's happening in terms of those. I don't really have the... We have 37 named wolf packs, 18 in Arizona, 19 in New Mexico.
And really? Wow.
A significant number of those are collared. So.
So they're in Arizona and New Mexico.
And Mexico.
You're right, and they don't drift over into Texas or California or up into Utah.
Well, see, the problem right now is the current rule that applies to Mexican wolves, that's the federal rule, requires the agencies to retrieve or kill wolves that go beyond the established recovery area. We've been fighting that for a long time.
Uh-huh.
So Mexico, Texas, any wolves going north of I-40, which bisects New Mexico and Arizona, are retrieved or eliminated.
Really? Huh. So, how many packs did you say there are?
Well, the current information we've got, there are 37 name packs, and again, 18 in Arizona, 19 in New Mexico. That's the current information.
And what's the population number? Is there an estimate on that?
Yeah, it's around, it varies, but it's around 150.
Uh-huh. And what's the variation on the pack size?
Well, a pack size is defined as two or four wolves that maintain an established territory. So that'll vary. We're trying to get the recovery area expanded.
What's the largest pack? What's the largest population in a pack?
It seems like there's been, depending on how the survival of pups, they can get up. They can get up around 10. But now it's about 6. I think. I'd have to double check that, it varies, and they are subject to illegal killings.
So the Mexican wolf is a subspecies of the gray wolf, is that right?
Correct.
And
it enjoys a unique status under the Endangered Species Act. So,
is there a noticeable difference between the gray wolf and the Mexican wolf?
Well, the Mexican wolf evolved in the basically desert Southwest, so it's a smaller animal, around 80 pounds or so, but it has effectively learned how to hunt elk, which is a fairly good-sized species. That was one of the earlier concerns. It's managed to figure that one out, so they're smaller, and they're also genetically unique, which is a problem right now because it's we're really concerned about the genetic diversity that the species has. That's a real concern.
And is it found as far west as the Grand Canyon or as far north?
Well, it used to be, and that's one of the things that we're trying to resolve. Right now, the current rule that applies to the Mexican wolf recovery area forbids them from going north of I-40, which eliminates two of the three major recovery areas identified by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's own scientists. So right now, we're trying to get that rule changed so any wolves that go north of I-40 could enter the Grand Canyon ecoregion and southern Utah or southern Colorado, northern New Mexico or southern Colorado.
So how does it fit into the ecosystem where it's currently found? What does it predate upon, and does it have any enemies that predate on it?
Well, other than humans, it really doesn't have any, or other wolves, it doesn't have any enemies, but it is an essential, you know, large carnivores like wolves
uh-huh.
and mountain lions are essential components of any healthy ecosystem. So we're in the process of turning a major contributor to ecosystem resilience by getting the wolves back into those areas. So
it doesn't tangle with mountain lions?
Well,
or jaguars?
Mountain lions, we haven't had any indication that a wolf would be stupid enough to take on a jaguar, but they do, you know, mountain lions and wolves co-evolve, and mountain lions tend to lose out in those competitions. One of the reasons why mountain lions climb trees to get away from predators is the effect that wolf packs had on their evolution, throughout North America. So,
are you and the people you're working with, are you satisfied with its population size, or are you anxious to see its population increase?
We're very dissatisfied with the population size. The Fish and Wildlife Service implemented this rule in defiance of the best science available. Their own scientists recommended a significantly larger population with additional recovery zones. So what the Fish and Wildlife Service at the behest of the state decided on a much smaller population than we consider as viable, and just one recovery area rather than the three specified by their science team in the United States, and relying heavily on Mexico as a recovery area. That's not working out.
So do you want to see its territory extended?
Absolutely. We want to see, we have, you know, the U.S. government has management authority over wolves in the United States, not Mexico, but we do want to see them extended north of I-40, which was the arbitrary boundary, to include southern Colorado, the San Juan Mountains, and
uh-huh.
the Grand Canyon ecoregion. So,
uh-huh.
yeah, it'll require a substantial expansion of the recovery area and an increase from the minimum population that they've established for recovery.
So does the Mexican wolf population, is it integrated with wolves that are south of the border? And do the wolves cross the border into Mexico and back this way?
Yeah, any wolf found in Mexico is a direct descendant of the population that was rescued by stealing the wolves from Mexico and raising them in, there was only seven wolves left
uh-huh.
in the world. So the various zoos provided opportunity to raise these wolves in captivity, and they were subsequently released into the United States, and several have been reintroduced into Mexico. So they're the same subspecies.
So they are actively crossing the border between Mexico and the U.S.?
They're trying to, of course. There has been a record of one or two wolves that have come up from Mexico and returned to, you know, to the United States and returned to Mexico. They're obviously that potential. But what the Trump administration is doing is building these walls that preclude movement for any animal of their size. So that includes jaguars and a number of other species.
Right. So the Mexican wolves, the wolves that are in Mexico are in the Sierra on the Mexican side of the border?
Sierra Madre, yeah. The problem in Mexico has to do with the status of the land. Most of it's private land, so you really have to work with a number of entities, and there is no public lands that we can expect, and there's a lot of cattle. So Mexico has a unique challenge in terms of establishing populations of Mexican wolves.
Does the Mexican government protect the wolves?
In theory, but the we're not really sure of the status. The folks that are doing the recovery in Mexico are really stressed in terms of funding, and you know, there's certain hazards going out with some of the along the border area regarding the cartels and things. So they have a lot of challenges. They certainly have good intentions, and they're certainly a dedicated lot, but their challenges are more than ours.
Okay, and are there? Does the Mexican wolf predate on any other species that are threatened or endangered?
Well, I'm sure they'll grab whatever they can. You know, they're not really conversant on what's protected or not, but they primarily feed on prey on deer and elk. That's their their preferred prey, but they'll eat what's available, I'm sure.
So what's your role in gaining its acceptance in New Mexico and Arizona?
Well, one of the things is to keep the Mexican wolf as an endangered species. Now, it's what's called a 10J classification, which means that it's experimental and that its status kind of is diminished from fully protected to threatened. So there's a lot of management flexibility, I think, is the term they use in terms of managing the recovery of that subspecies. So our role is to make sure the agencies follow the law, you know. But our role is to ensure that the management plan that comes from the revision of the rule, which they have to have, they have to revise this rule that precludes a lot of things, but, you know, movement north of I-40. They have to have a plan out that has to be completed by next year, say May of 2021. So we're getting people aware of that. We're encouraging the agency and the new administration to make sure that we have a good rule and that we have a sufficient management plan that really results in recovery of the Mexican wolf.
So how are ranchers doing with the wolves? What's their attitude?
Well, it's sort of a traditional, most of them, well, to say the least, are not enthusiastic. There's some that are quite hostile, but there are some that have accepted, you know, large predators on their grazing permits, and it depends on the rancher. But the Defenders of Wildlife, particularly a guy named Craig Miller, are working very effectively with ranchers in terms of coming up with coexistence criteria so that wolves and ranchers can get along. So we'll just see how that plays out. But
so there is an effort to try to get ranchers to accommodate with the wolves?
Sure, yeah. And again, it's been Defenders of Wildlife that's been fairly active in that realm. And there's varying degrees of success, but the key is to keep the Mexican wolf under the protection of the Endangered Species Act so that we have authority to protect it, and we can't rely on the states. States are, both Arizona and New Mexico have been pretty bad in terms of actually protecting that species.
So I assume that ranchers can shoot wolves that predate on livestock, is that right?
Well, there's a lot of restrictions to that. They're required to implement some non-lethal measurements. Ultimately, they do shoot wolves that attack their, that are actively attacking their livestock. But usually, it's sort of these preemptive attempts, you know, proactive killing of the animals so that they don't have to deal with it. There are just some bad apples in that whole lot. There always have been.
Yeah, right. So U.S. Fish and Wildlife is pretty supportive of the they play a positive role.
Well, they're required to by law. So yes, they do.
But the state agencies are hostile or at least neutral about it?
Well, states are required to help, you know, to assist in the recovery. And they have done, there's a lot of good staff out in the field that have done a remarkable job in doing that. But the bottom line is that the various state agencies have undermined the potential for wolf recovery through the restriction of the recovery areas, you know, confining north, south of I-40. Placing heavy emphasis on Mexico as a recovery zone when they knew damn well that wasn't going to work out, at least in the short term. So I'd say, yeah, they are supportive in terms of requirements under the law, but in terms of the culture itself, it's problematic.
So Defenders of Wildlife is heavily involved. Are there other NGOs that are active in protecting the wolf?
Oh, yes. There's sort of an informal coalition that includes the big guys, Center for Biological Diversity, Sierra Club, those folks. But there's a lot of smaller groups that are actively engaged in protecting them, including the Rewilding Institute, the Grand Canyon Wolf Recovery Project, a variety of others that have played a very essential and important role in getting the word out and protecting that species. So, yes.
So what other keystone species are you working on?
Well, in terms of protected species, it's always been the wolf and jaguar and grizzly bears. There's no grizzly bears in Arizona or New Mexico, but there could be. But
yeah.
Mountain lions, you know, that's an important keystone species that's heavily persecuted. That would be, and jaguars certainly, but, you know, things like ferocious animals like prairie dogs and, you know, they're important. Beaver are really important keystone species that continue to be persecuted, and we've got to get some kind of protection for those species.
So, You're involved with assisting other conservationist partners in the development and implementation of the Western Wildway.
Yes.
That includes wilderness and national monument designations?
Well, it certainly does. There's a lot of protected areas in the West, but the problem is that they're not often effectively connected, and that's been one of the establishing wildlife corridors that are managed to provide for connectivity, you know, looking at places, you know, the freeways and highways, the things that are pretty lethal to wildlife movement, you know, coordinating with various groups to get funding for crossings, you know, overpasses, underpasses, but also getting the agencies to incorporate goals and management objectives in their land use plans that facilitates the movement and migration of wildlife.
So are you involved in the issue over Bears Ears National Monument and Escalante Staircase?
Yeah, we are pretty instrumental in getting those established, and there are a number of groups that are litigating those decisions by the Trump administration to eviscerate those monuments. So, yeah, it's something that's really that we're paying close attention to.
Well, I think Biden has indicated that he's going to attempt to restore original boundaries, but I'm wondering if there's any activity that has any exploration or drilling activity that's occurred in either of those national monuments in the area where there's a border dispute, where Trump tried to pull back.
He's trying to encourage, you know, extraction of fossil fuels in Bears Ears in particular. But, so those efforts are being litigated, but there's also an active outreach by various conservationists to encourage the Biden administration to rescind those, establish the old monument boundaries. I think that's something that they're inclined to do, and certainly are encouraged. Conservationists are encouraging to do that as initial steps in the first 100 days of the administration. So
you're hopeful that the original boundaries are going to be restored with the Biden administration?
I mean, optimistic that he'll do that. It's something that they're committed to, and it's certainly something that's they're inclined to do. I did have the fortune of taking Biden on a river trip in the mid-70s when he was still, you know, when he was just a freshman senator.
Go ahead. So you worked for many years in the Grand Canyon. So how do you feel about the Grand Canyon and the Glen Canyon Dam that blocks the Colorado flowing through the canyon?
Well, Glen Canyon is symbolic of a lot of things that are wrong with the West. It should not have been built, obviously. It's got a long, complicated history. But it has had a profound impact on Grand Canyon itself.
Has it?
I was a river guide and a river ranger down there for about 30 years. So the good thing about the dam is it provides cold water that keeps deer cold. But other than that, it doesn't do, it's pretty harmful. The species, the native species that evolved there, this sediment transport, just a lot of things that make it a bad deal for the Grand Canyon ecosystem.
Okay, Kim. Well, we've exhausted our time, so really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. I wish you well on what you're trying to accomplish. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
Our guest today has been Kim Crumbo, a member of the Leadership Council of the Rewilding Institute and the Mexican Recovery Consultant with the Wildlands Network. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, Google Wilderness and Wildlife or go online to jswilderness5.net and see additional features of our website. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.